Blog Talk Radio.
All your opinions and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Paul? What's doing, man?
How are you?
You know, I'm lucky to have a wife who was a cute kid.
Okay. Lucky you. And congratulations to you. But, you know, today, big day, big show, as always. I'm going to be joined by CSN Bay Area sports anchor Scott Reese, who will come on by and give us the lowdown on Game 6 of the NLCS. He's going to give us a Giant perspective and just his perspective in general on this series. And also, Benny Thompson will stop on by, former NFL safety, played for the Browns, Chiefs, Saints, Ravens. He's going to tell us and give his thoughts. I mean, he's a former safety, so he would know this topic. He's going to give his thoughts on the crackdown, on the NFL's crackdown on these helmet-to-helmet hits. So that should be interesting to get his take. A guy who can give a perspective on how it feels and what you have to do real-time in a lot of ways to make sure that you don't get fined, because that's what a lot of players will be doing this upcoming NFL weekend. They're going to do things to avoid having to pay fines, and I personally do not blame them. But we're going to get into that with Benny Thompson. But we want to start with the NLCS and Game 6 tonight here in Philadelphia. If the Giants win tonight, they will face the Texas Rangers, who have already clinched a berth to the World Series, beating the Yankees last night and winning that series 4-2. The NLCS tonight, very intriguing. It's been a very intriguing series. Right now, the Giants are up 3-2. The Phillies won Game 5 Thursday night. Roy Halladay, the doctor, fighting through a groin injury, got it done for the Phillies. Gave up two earned runs, struck out five in his over six innings. It was enough to keep the Phillies in the game, and ultimately the Phillies benefited from some sloppy play from the Giants, the error on Aubrey Huff, which led to two runs. And ultimately, they took it over, and they won this game, and it brought it back to Philly. And they're down 3-2, but in terms of the way the series is set up, this is what you wanted. You wanted an opportunity to have those two games at your ballpark. And the Phillies have this opportunity to have two games at the Citizens Bank Park, a park that is geared to what they do on the baseball field, and that's hit home runs. That's what this team is all about, and that's what Charlie Manuel preaches. That's small ball here in Philly. So this is perfect for their ballpark.
Paul, I got to stop you. You used a couple of words that scared me. I mean, unless you're in left field or out of reality, this is not perfect for the Phillies. This is not the situation that they wanted to be in, nor should they be in.
But the way that the series is set up, 2-3-2 series, the way it's all set up, this is what you wanted. You wanted an opportunity in your ballpark. Granted, you'd rather be up 3-2
down, then that's what you need to
games,
say.
Let's keep it real.
Let's keep it real, Paul.
This is the second postseason in a row
that the Philadelphia Philly offense comes up not just small. I mean, they come up like childlike. Ryan Howard especially. I mean, Jimmy Rollins, they can hide behind their – Rollins can hide behind the injury. I don't know what Ryan Howard's hiding behind. I mean, other than Worth, who we talked about 2 weeks ago, probably will be leaving this team, who – I mean, if it's any indication who shouldn't be leaving this team, it's him. I mean, he's, like, had an unbelievable playoff for them. Only guy on the roster other than Ruiz who seems to never really get the credit he deserves. But this was embarrassing. Paul, this series was embarrassing.
You have to forget that you're going up against three very good starters, and Tim Lincecum comes the freak. Matt Cain and Jonathan Sanchez. These are three legitimate top-notch starters. So you're going up against three legitimate starters. You can't say you expected this team to score a lot of runs in this series.
You didn't expect this
to be a high-scoring series.
More so the Giants and the Phillies,
because you would think the Phillies would have the better offense. They do have the offense advantage going into this game.
Paul, first of all, it wasn't about a high-scoring game, but the Phillies Up until they got Oswalt, where they have three dominant starters, they've always been in the last 3-4 years where they've had this, you know, run of theirs. They have been known much more as an offensive powerhouse, you know, than a pitching juggernaut. Howard sucks.
Yeah,
What about Jimmy Rollins?
I mean, none of these hitters have really, really played well in these playoffs. I mean, so if you look at it, this team has been carried by their pitching throughout the year. This team has been going on slumps throughout this whole year. This offense has slumped. So this is not really surprising. You can't be surprised about what's going on right now with this Phillies offense. But you also have to remember they're going up against a very top-notch pitching staff in the San Francisco Giants. So you can't discount that, and you can't look over that. But at the same time, ultimately, they have to get it done. And if you want to be a championship teams get it done in big spots, and this team has gotten it done in big spots these past 3 years. And I expect them to come up big again in this big spot, and I expect them ultimately to get to the World Series. I expect them to win. I really do. And you have Oswalt, who was strong in his last outing, very strong performance in his last outing, pitched 8 innings, let up 1 run, struck out 9. He was strong. And you have Hamels going to Game 7, a possible Game 7. No, it's not possible. Game 7, because there will be a Game 7 in this series. You have Cole Hamels going up in Game 7. And Matt Cain, he will be facing Matt Cain, who shut out the Phillies his last time out. But if you look at it with Cole Hamels, I mean, you have a guy who's been pitching very well and pitched decent in the game that he pitched for the Phillies. That was game three, excuse me. He pitched well there. So if you look at that, you have to give the Phillies a legitimate shot, and you have to almost believe that they'll win this series. And plus, they have it at Citizens Bank Ballpark, a ballpark which is suited to what they do, which is hit the home run. So it should be an exciting time down there at Citizens Bank Ballpark, and this should be a fun 2 games. But if you look at it, I think you have to say that the Phillies are the favorite at this point.
Paul, I think they're going to win tonight too, maybe mostly because of, you know, where I was born and raised, and that might be a little bit of emotion. But I can tell you honestly, I will not be surprised at all if – If San Francisco comes in and dominates, I can honestly tell you I wouldn't be surprised, because I think the way they have played in this series, they have really come into this series, to me, with an air of confidence that I thought the Phillies should have had. To me, the Phillies have been playing.
They definitely are coming into a very confident ball club. But when you have the pitching that they have, you can come in very confident. I mean,
where the Phillies
starters. Yes, the Phillies But maybe the Phillies, maybe it's a pressure thing. If you're, that's what, maybe it's the Phillies are, maybe they're feeling the heat a little bit because they're the favorite. They're the one that many expected to get back to the World Series.
I think they look
fantastic. Giants are coming with confidence.
I think they really
they
look
have come in with confidence.
I look at it and say they really have looked past. They look past. I think they look past this team.
I don't think they look past the Giants.
I think they look past their offense.
As a Phillies fan, this is a matchup you didn't want to see because of the pitching that they have. And pitching
not in this area.
A lot of weaknesses in your ball club. Pitching can hide a lot of weaknesses in your ball club.
But
this
not
is
in Philadelphia.
You're not here in San Francisco.
Paul, you're in the mountains. See, you're all the way up in the mountains of Philadelphia. I mean, here in the inner sanctum of Philadelphia, you're out there a little bit. You're too far away now.
Regardless of where I am, in Philadelphia, Paul, in Philly, of all those things that you're saying, the bottom line is with the pitching that this Giants team has, you had to give them a shot in the series.
But you know
you
as well as I do, Philadelphia.
A tough time.
But the fans of Philadelphia,
a tough time.
Paul, you did not. You know as well as I do. Most fans in Philadelphia were not. I think the pundits and the experts definitively did not want to see the Giants. But I don't know many of these laissez-faire Philly fans who are root for the home team who said, you know what, this is going to be a tougher matchup. This is a matchup almost like the World Series of last year, where you know they're going against theoretically. There's a very good case you made that the Giants on paper too are a better team than the Phillies.
Pitching-wise, you can make the argument. In terms of lineup, no, an argument cannot be made there. You would have a hard time making that argument.
Well, Paul,
you
but pitching is pitching. Pitching
have to argue against a drunk person to make that argument. You need a drunk person to argue. You can argue pitching, but you can't argue lineup.
Let's look at one thing. Ryan Howard had a subpar year. Let's be honest. The guy had a subpar
year.
Well, Ryan
Howard did not have a subpar year. I wouldn't call him a subpar year. He missed time throughout this year.
It was a subpar year. So did Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy Rollins, Paul. See, but this to me.
Jimmy Rollins missed a lot of time and did not have a great year. Jimmy Rollins didn't have a great year. I'll give you that.
Paul, when you're injured, let's make it clear. When you're injured, the injury is a reality for Ryan Howard. But when he was healthy, Ryan Howard was not playing well. Was he maybe not playing well because of the injury? I guess we can give him that. But I'm tired of people like not pointing the finger at the big guns who, especially in the postseason, definitively didn't produce. I mean, absolutely positively, they got no production. None. Victorino was like a nothing the whole postseason, especially against the Giants. I mean, Chase Utley.
Victorino hasn't been bad in this series. He hasn't been bad in this series.
You know what, Paul? I think you're looking at the fact that he hasn't been bad, comparing him to, you know, comparing to Rollins, who's been abysmal, who's swinging at everything, who's up there, just instead of taking pitches, is swinging way too much.
Well, let's get the perspective of CSN Bay Area's Scott Reese. Scott, how are you, sir?
Paul, I'm great, man. I'm in Philly eating a hoagie before Game 6. Doesn't get better than this.
Maybe a cheesesteak, but...
Well, believe me, been there, done that. We were here last weekend, too.
Now, Scott, you are back in Philadelphia, and then the Giants, they're here in Philadelphia. Talk about the confidence of the Giants going into this game, Game 6.
You know, the thing with this team, and I heard the discussion about whether the Giants might be a better team. I find it hard, even as a guy who's covered them all year, to make the argument that they're a better team than the Phillies. But there's something about this team. They just defy all logic when it comes to certain things and playing the game. And confidence is something that they've had from day one. And then you might say it was unfounded from day one because nobody knew if this team was going to hit enough to really contend. But these guys are absolutely the same following the Game 1 win and the Game 2 loss in this series and the Game 3 win and the Game 5 loss. They don't change. The demeanor doesn't change. You go into the clubhouse, it really is exactly the same. And it's cliche, and nobody wants to hear the one game at a time, but if ever there was a team that really buys into that and plays every day like it's just one baseball game, it's this team. So they have every confidence in the world that they're going to win this game tonight.
And this is a team that's full of retreads and cast-offs and no more than Cody Ross. I mean, two home runs in game one, NL leading, four home runs in these playoffs, eight RBI in this postseason. What has gotten into Cody Ross?
Well, we're pretty sure he sold his soul about a week ago. that's the prevailing theory, because there's really nothing else that explains it. And, you know, you keep expecting it to end, right? And all right, so he hasn't hit a home run in a few games, but now, you know, he breaks his bat, and it's an RBI single. He hits a ground ball to shortstop, which should end an inning, and Rollins boots it, and the run scores. I mean, it seems like everything this guy touches right now, you know, he went the other way in the sort of soft liner down the right field line in the last game for an RBI double. So I don't know what's going on with this guy. I don't know what they're feeding him, but hey, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And he's a good guy, so, you know, it's good to see him have success. And remember, this is a guy the Giants didn't even particularly want. You know, they claimed him off of waivers basically so that the Padres couldn't. And at that time, they had Guillen, and they had five or six outfielders, and everybody thought, where's this guy even going to play? Well, now he's probably played himself into possibly a multi-year deal with them next year.
Well, and that was actually one of the things I wanted to touch on was the fact that it seemed like all season long, especially for the Giants, they were in a much, I think, tougher division than the Phillies. They really had to, especially, you know, near the end of the stretch, they had to play much better baseball going in, you know, to the playoffs than the Phillies did. And it seemed like this team was much more focused, knowing what they had to do, than the Phillies, who I think everyone predicted they were going to be in the World Series.
Yeah, and I think that's a big deal. And we talked about that a lot down the stretch in September about how battle-tested this team is, because every game was like a playoff game for the last month of the season. And, you know, as obviously it went down to the last day of the season when they beat San Diego at home to get in. So I think that makes a difference. I think the Phillies are also a team that, you know, has historically gotten used to putting so many runs on the board that they have a lot of those, you know, 11-3, 10-4 kind of games. And you combine that with the cushion they had the last week or two of the season once the Braves faded a little bit, and it was certainly a lot easier for Philadelphia down the stretch. The Giants had to scratch and claw and 2-1 and 1-0 and, you know, last day of the season. So I think there's definitely something to that.
You know, and Paul said, you know, if you were listening, that he sees it as a lock that the Phillies are walking in Game 7. And I said, I mean, we're both from Philadelphia. We definitively have ties here. I am not going to be surprised if this Giants team does not recognize. I don't think they want to go to a Game 7 with the Phillies. I don't think any team in baseball wants to go to a Game 7 in Philadelphia with the Phillies and that offense and the success they've had at Citizens. I mean, I'd like to hear your perspective on how focused are the Giants in terms of recognizing their opportunity in Game 6 versus Game 7?
I tell you what, everything you said is right on the money, but in that clubhouse, Game 7 is not even on the radar. They're simply looking at, they're playing a baseball game tonight, they're going to go out and win the baseball game tonight. I mean, clearly, nobody wants to play a Game 7 on the road anywhere, let alone in a venue as tough as Philly, but you know, this team isn't worried about Game 7. And to be honest with you, as ridiculous as it sounds, my point about these Giants is you just can't figure them out and you never know. And you go to a Game 7 and every logical opinion on the street is going to say, well, of course the Phillies are going to win Game 7. There's no way the Giants can win Game 7. I tell you what, you just don't know with this team. And remember what Matt Cain did to him back in San Francisco. So, you know,
right,
we'll see what happens if it gets there. But I think Sanchez is going to pitch well tonight. I think that he got his nerves out in the first inning. You remember back in Game 2 when he walked free and there was an error behind him and the Phillies got to him early. He settled
right
down and pitched really well. And the old Jonathan Sanchez of a year ago would have melted and he never would have come back from that. He came back and threw a great baseball game after that first inning. So I'm thinking that he probably got that out of his system. And tonight I think he goes out and pitches well.
Now, the key to the Giants, obviously is their big three of Lincecum, Cain, and Sanchez. The Giants they're not here without their pitching.
No, they're not even in the they're 10 games under 500 without their pitching. I mean, that's it with this team.
Many forget about their closer, Brian Wilson, who led the major, excuse me, with 48 saves. And this guy, he's lights out.
he is lights out, and he didn't used to be lights out. You know, he used to be more of the Mitch Williams variety, you know, get the job done, but make you sweat buckets in the process. Most of this year, he was legitimately lights out. He wasn't putting guys on base. He was pitching clean ninth innings. He's gone a little bit back to the wild thing kind of role in the playoffs. He's had a few more interesting saves along the way, but it's the postseason. I mean, you guys know it's. There's no three outs that are harder to get in a baseball game than the ninth, and you know that gets magnified. I don't know how many times once you get into the postseason. That ninth inning is brutal. So Wilson's as lights out as they come. I mean, he's a big reason the Giants are here, and I think it's unfortunate that not a lot of people nationally realize just how off the charts good this guy's been this year.
Now, Scott, you're starting to see some chippiness in this series. You had the whole Burrow, Pat Burrow, and Roy Holiday staring each other down. And you had Jimmy Rollins. You had Lincecum yelling at him after they got the inning-ending double play. Can you talk of the chippiness on the Giants' side?
Not really. And I don't think it's going to be an issue so much going forward. I think that you had a couple of guys, especially, you know, Lincecum is a guy who will – let his emotions get to him momentarily like that. And it's happened a couple of times this season where he, you know, was mad at an umpire, this or that, and he sort of mouthed things and the cameras got him and got blown out of proportion. And then with the humidor balls in Colorado was the big deal with that, where he was saying, you know, I won't repeat it, but the expletive baseballs. And so I think that Sanchez is not that guy, so I don't think it's going to be as much of an issue with him. And I don't know. I think that both teams are going to rein it in. I think it's just about baseball tonight.
I'm yelling and screaming about every day is the lack of the real Philadelphia Philly offense. And I wonder sometimes, you know, the Giants, I think, have to at some point be looking around and saying, wow, this is not what we expected. Or are they really just, you know, they seem to be very focused, like you said, just on every day, and really just on themselves, and they really don't seem to be playing the Phillies as much as they seem to be playing themselves.
I think that's absolutely accurate. I don't think they're mindful of the opponent, and obviously Bruce Bochy's been a master of pushing the right buttons and in terms of dealing with the opponent in game situations this year. He's been terrific, but you know what? That team doesn't really care who's in the other dugout. They're all about their game, and their game starts with the starting pitching. They expect it, and they get it, you know, 4 out of 5 days. So they figure, look, the other guy's probably not going to score more than 2 or 3 runs in this game, so we go get a little bit of offense, we're going to win. And that's the formula. And then the other thing with the Giants is, you know, they don't have the star-studded middle of that lineup. They don't have the Rollins, Utley, Howard, Victorino, Worth, all these big boppers, you know, who are going to hit you 30, 35 home runs, but you never know with the Giants. You never know where the offense is going to come from. And the guy who hits 8 more often than not is Wally Ribeiro. He had 24 home runs this year, and that's your 8th hitter. So it's not a great lineup, but it's a balanced lineup, and it's a lineup where 1 through 8 on any given day, anybody can beat you. And I think that's one of the intriguing things about this team. It's not so much what you got to worry about the middle of the order. You just don't know where it's going to come from.
Now, in Game 5, the Giants killed themselves with some mistakes. They had the Aubrey Huff error that led to 2 runs, and also the base running blunder by Cody Ross. And they had an opportunity against an ailing Roy Holiday. In your mind, should the Giants be kicking themselves after how they performed in Game 5? Because they had an opportunity to end it in San Francisco.
Yeah, and obviously I'm sure they're aware that was an opportunity. But, you know, Aubrey Huff made 3 errors all season. I mean, he was surprisingly good at first base and in the outfield all year. So to see him boot a ball like that, it's just a fluke. You know, it happens, and unfortunately for the Giants, it happened at the wrong time. The Cody thing was obviously a blunder on 2 levels. You don't make the 3rd out of 3rd, and you certainly don't run on that guy with Jason Worth's arm. But it didn't cause the Giants to run. So I think that, you know, they moved past it. They were over it about 10 minutes after the game. And, again, it's business as usual. You know, they've gone on the road twice in the playoffs. They've played 4 road games. They've won 3 out of 4. So in their minds, it's, all right, we're going to go on the road. We're going to win a game. That's it.
Now, Buster Posey, catcher, he's had a great playoffs. He had 4 hits in Game 4. How good is this guy?
He's off the charts. And it's not just what you see on the field, and this is what the guys will always attest to in the clubhouse, is he carries himself like a veteran. I mean, guys go to him for advice. And this kid's 23. He's been in the majors for half a season. But he absolutely embodies everything that is, you know, great about a baseball player. Great baseball mind, great hitter. And to catch the best pitching staff in the league, you know, remember they had, what, 21 straight starts. They set a record in September for most consecutive starts of six innings and three runs or less or whatever it was. And he's the guy behind the plate. He's calling the pitches. They don't shake him off. I mean, this kid is one of these sort of once-in-a-generation type players, and it's not just his offense, but it's the whole package. He's got a cannon, although they've run on him a little bit in this series. A lot of that, the Giants pitchers aren't very good at holding guys on, but he is the real deal, and if he doesn't win Rookie of the Year, there ought to be an investigation.
Well, Scott, it's prediction time now. Giants lead the series 3-2. The Texas Rangers are waiting in the World Series. How do you see this thing playing out?
You know, my gut tells me, and I'm talking to two Philly guys, and I know that this is going to come off as biased because I work in the Bay Area. But Paul, you know, I was at ESPN for a lot of years. I try to stay objective when it comes to this stuff, and I can certainly spot the flaws in the Giants. And again, I can admit I don't think that they're a better team than the Phillies. But that said, something tells me, and I've felt this ever since they lost Game 5. I just feel that they're going to go in there tonight and they're going to win the ballgame. I think Sanchez is going to throw really well. I think if the Giants get a lead in the late innings, it's going to be real tough for Philadelphia to come back the way Javi Lopez and Brian Wilson are pitching. And it's just a gut feeling, nothing more. Now, that said, and again, nothing surprises me with this team. Nothing. Philly could win 10-1. It wouldn't surprise me. Giants could win 10-2. You know, the Giants, as sketchy as that offense is, we saw in September that they would go 2 days and score a total of one run, and then on Sunday they'd put up 11. And they did that about four straight series. So on any given day, this Giants team can put up numbers. Maybe today's that day. Maybe they win 10-4. I don't know. I just I feel like the Giants get it done tonight, and I base that on nothing but instinct and following this team.
So it's over tonight, according to Scott Reese.
Which means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things.
It means something. It means something. Well, Scott, we'll definitely see what happens. We'll all be watching. You won't be there, right? And you're on the pregame show for CSN Bay Area?
Yeah, I'll be here. We're actually no pregame tonight for reasons I won't bother getting into, but we'll have postgame coverage for about 17 hours after the game. So, I will be at the stadium.
So, Scott Reese, CSN Bay Area. Scott, thank you for stopping by, sir. We'd love to have you on again in the future.
All right, guys, you got it. Anytime.
All right, take care.
All right.
Scott Reese, CSN Bay Area, covers the Giants for CSN Bay Area, and he has the Giants winning tonight. Just his instinct, just a hunch. But he has the Giants winning tonight. I disagree. Seems like, judging from what Jeremy has been saying, that he agrees with Scott.
I think that this postseason, we haven't really gotten into it because of busy Eagle season, and certainly, we did talk about it right before the playoffs. We both had expected much more from this team than. Than what we've seen so far.
It's almost like I want to call you Bay Area Jeremy. You have switched sides in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, I know you're trying to get in the stand-up, so, you know, do your best, Paul. I'm sure everyone's laughing with you. But let's keep it real. I mean, do the Phillies really deserve, you know, for anybody to say, you know, they're going to be able to win because it's Game 6 and they know the importance of it? They knew the importance of every game in the series, and if they would have known the opponent, I don't think, especially the offense, would have played well. Their offense is...
You fail to realize that this Giants pitching staff has been off the charts down the stretch of the season, and they've been playing well in these playoffs, and you're going up against three top-notch starters here. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, you can't expect to put up a lot of runs. You're not going to put up a lot of runs. And you're not going to expect a lot of runs in this series as a whole. So, I mean, that's the kind of way I view it, in the way I understand. I think when it's all said and done, when it's money time, and this is money time, game 6 and 7 at their home ballpark, Philadelphia Paul believes that the Phillies will get it done. And
well, for a guy
for whatever reason,
Paul, you know what? If
for whatever reason,
Paul,
Bay Area Jeremy, Bay Area Jeremy, has went over to the dark side with Lindsay coming to those boys, and he's a big time Giants fan for whatever reason. I don't know when this happened, but apparently it happened. I guess it happened today, or it happened with the interview with Scott Reese. Maybe Scott Reese turned you the other way, turned you to the dark side, the Giants side. But we'll definitely see what happens. The numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. You can send email messages to the show at goforward.gant@gmail.com. That's goforward.gant@gmail.com. I want to switch gears now to the NFL. And this past week, we saw a lot of hard hits. We saw a lot of guys go down with concussions. We saw a lot of guys get fined. And so a lot of guys, this week should be very interesting to see how some of these guys react and how some of these guys are going to play, because they don't want to lose money. I mean, $75,000 for Brandon Merriweather from the Patriots, James Harrison, $75,000, Dante Robinson of the Atlanta Falcons, $75,000. And, yeah, James Harrison even contemplating retirement. I don't know how serious he was, but even contemplating retirement. So we're going to talk to Benny Thompson, former NFL safety, Ravens, played for the Browns, played for the Chiefs, played for the Saints. And he's a guy in the know, and he's a guy who knows. I mean, we're asking these guys to make real-time decisions there in terms of, okay, make sure you don't lead with the helmet, or make sure you don't go to the head, and make sure you don't do all these things, because it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you money. And so guys are going to have to make decisions here, how they're going to tackle now. Guys are going to have to make decisions here, and economic decisions in a lot of ways.
The other thing, Paul, and it's certainly going to be interesting to get Benny's thoughts, is like you said, for how players, especially the first week where, because the NFL certainly came down heavy-handed to let people know how they feel. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to play, how the defense is going to react to a rule change in the middle of the season.
And definitely. I mean, and in a lot of ways, it's a rule that has been on the books, but it wasn't really enforced. And basically, like you're saying, you're basically changing the rule midstream here. So that's going to be tough for guys to react to. And also now you're talking about suspending guys. You're talking about not only fining but suspending. So you're going to be costing guys some money here, and they're going to crack down, and guys are going to have to adjust, or they're going to have to pay the price. And so it should be interesting to see what Benny has to say on that. And we are now being joined by former NFL safety Benny Thompson. Benny, how are you, sir?
Doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, doing well. Benny, let's just get your initial reaction when you heard about the league and them cracking down on some of these hits.
Well, my first reaction is that you can't go out there and play the game and worry about fines. That's for one. You got to go out and, if you go out and play the game hard and clean, I may say, and the head-to-head thing, things are going to happen. I seen some plays last week where I really thought that, they were just football plays. And I also saw some plays last week where it was head-to-head contact. And I can understand the league's point of view on this, because I've talked to several ex-players myself. As of yesterday, I've talked to two guys that have serious concussion problems as I speak right now. I mean, unfortunately, I haven't been diagnosed with anything yet, but that's not to say I will or I won't. But I understand the league's point of view is that, they have to look out for the players' best interest as far as once their career is over, because that's when it starts affecting them more.
Now, Benny, you're a guy who in your career has suffered some concussions, I would imagine.
Right.
Were you a type of guy who came back in and played even with a concussion? Have you played with concussions at times?
Yes, I can honestly say yes, I have done it, but I don't think it was a smart thing to do. Now that I look back on it, I didn't think it was a smart thing to do. And now that what the league is doing now is telling the players that you don't have to go back in the game if you get a concussion of that anything of that nature. Because before it was, the guy was looking at, I may lose my job if I don't get back in there, and, this and that. But the league is saying the players do not have to necessarily go back in the game. And this has been happening a long time ago where you don't have to necessarily go back in the game if you get a concussion. But the players, being who they are, and like myself, wanted to get back in on the action. And, you're right, I went back in the game.
Well, and Benny, you touched on something that I've always said is – unfortunately, the economics of the business, which is a sport that you're in, and that is, for what an athlete does is, their body is basically their business. You're self-employed, whether you work for a team or the league. There's only so many safeties in the league or so many receivers, and injuries are a part of these games, and I think it's very difficult for the fans to really understand when people say, well, they should have known about a concussion or they should know about the risks. Because, unfortunately, like you said, you're one hit away from being out with a minor injury, but if in that game somebody plays really well and they're a younger guy and maybe it's their chance and you're an older player, there's every week economics are definitively at play in this league.
Exactly. Yep, you're exactly right about that. But at the same time, here's my look on it and my perspective on it. And I understand, like I said earlier to you guys, is that I understand the league perspective, but my perspective is you can't go out there and worry about, am I going to get fined if I hit this guy? I seen some hits last week that you play the game of football for those kind of hits. It wasn't helmet to helmet. I think the Atlanta Falcon kid and the hit the Philadelphia guy, that's the kind of hit that you...
I had a problem with that one as well.
Yeah, that's the kind of hit you dream about as a football player. I know I did, and if you're going to fine me for a hit like that one, then I probably would have been fined every week because I would take that hit any day, and you can take my money or whatever because it's not about the money if it really comes down to it. It's about going out playing the game the way the game's supposed to be played.
Yeah, and that's the thing that Paul and I were saying at the beginning of the show is that, and I completely agree with Paul. This week definitely is going to be very interesting to watch how defensive
mm-hmm.
players in real time are now going to have to. I mean, all three of the hits that the NFL said, I really thought cases were made that they may have been aggressive hits, but that's the defense of the NFL for I think the last 5 to 7 years, where I mean the players are really looking to make the offensive players aware. If you come especially over the middle, if you
mm-hmm.
come across the middle, it was always known you better be willing to take the hit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, my thing is about it is that it's going to be interesting to see this week how players react because, from my understanding, there was a tape that was sent to every NFL team to show to the guys and what's legal and what's illegal, or what hit is legal and what hit is not legal. And my thing is that you can't go out there and play the game worrying about, am I going to get fined for hitting a guy? You can't do that because the minute you hesitate, that's when you most likely will get hurt yourself. So you just got to go out and play the game full speed and let whatever happens. But I can guarantee you that I don't know if you guys seen the hit where the Merriweather kid from New England hit Todd Heat from the Baltimore Ravens. That's the kind of thing that they're trying to get away from. That's head-to-head contact. Yeah, I can understand that. But the Philadelphia Atlanta game, that's the kind of hit you dream about as a football player.
But Benny, Paul, let me touch on the New England hit. It was definitively the most aggressive of the three.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at that, there's parts of this that I think people forget the player part of it, and that's why I say, like, you at least admit you were definitively a very aggressive tackler, very aggressive hitter. But in the last couple of years, the defensive players really have been, I think, and wrongly so, but they've been almost taught or showed that now their head or helmet could be a weapon.
Right.
And I think you have to look at how young some of these players are. You don't see the veteran players that are smarter, especially more injury conscious, but the younger players in college are being taught that the helmet is a weapon. And no matter how you try to break that, that goes back to even high school where the coaches aren't really shown – they're too often not tackling. And you – I mean, following your career and you watch these younger players, you see defenses not tackling well. They're never square. Their head is usually down when it's not up and, you know, hitting the body. And they're leading with shoulders. You never really see a strong tackler anymore.
Right. One of the things I have to say is that throughout my career in my football that I've been playing since I was small, I've never had a coach to teach you to lead with your head. And I don't think there's any coach that teaches that kind of football. That's just a natural instinct for a player to go in and duck his head to try to make a tackle or whatever. But I don't think that's ever been taught.
It's at Sports Center. You know, the coaches now, and I've always said this, it's the Sports Centers, it's the local Comcast channels, it's the glorification of the highlight where when they see that pop, it's run on Sports Center every 30 seconds. And it's run during the game. It's run – you watch the games. You
right.
see they go through – the one hit is done 20 times, and so the players – are shown this, and everybody wants to make Sports Center, and that
mm-hmm.
hit they know now I'm gonna get my Sports Center showcase.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep, you're correct. And that also the thing that's very disturbing is that the league is finding guys for the head shots, but then they take and get a free shot of it, and from my understanding, they were selling these pictures.
They recently took those pictures down, but you're right. They were benefiting off of those pictures.
Exactly. But then you turn around and you find the guys for the hits, but then you turn around and selling the pictures that the kids was hitting. And I really didn't understand that from the NFL standpoint. But I do, and let's not get it wrong here. I don't want nobody to think that, this head thing is not that serious. Like I said, I've talked to, matter of fact, two of ex-players yesterday that I played with, and they have very serious head injury going on right now as we speak. And this is the thing that's, you know, you may not take it serious while you in the game or playing the game, but once you are done playing, this is something that's becoming very, very serious. And the NFL is what they call compensating retired guys for these head injuries, because I went out last week to California to get to be examined through a head specialist, and I'm not sure what the results came back, but I don't have any problem, but I don't know what's going on up there, but I'm not a doctor. But the NFL, that's why they are taking this very seriously.
And you're right. I mean, ultimately, this is something that should be taken serious. And because, like you said, I mean, you have a lot of guys right now who are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You had the situation with Andre Waters years back where
mm-hmm.
he committed suicide, and they're trying to relate that to some of the brain injuries that he suffered playing football.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you look at all these situations, and you're right. They something definitely does need to be done about
right.
this, and they have to do something about it. But is there any way that this could be done without taking – I mean, there's going to be violence in the game of football.
Exactly.
That's just the nature of the game in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So do you think there's any way they can get around this without – kind of taking away the part that in a lot of ways that sells the game, the violence?
You know what? I don't think so. But my thinking is, if I was still in the game, I would not go out worrying about, am I going to get fined
right.
from hitting a guy or anything of that nature, because that's not the way I was taught to play the game. You know, I was taught to play full speed and go as hard as I can. So, to answer your question, I really don't know. It'll be very interesting to see come this week or tomorrow to see how the guys are going to react to, you know, hitting guys coming across the middle or whatever. You know, it's going to be very interesting.
Benny, you
know, when you look at this whole situation with guys, like I said before, possibly losing money and possibly, you know, losing games, which also equates to losing money, do you think that some of these guys will start thinking about possibly those fines and start thinking about losing money when they go out and play?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, you look at the James Harris situation. He can't afford, I mean, regardless of how much of money he makes, nobody wants to give away $75,000. So you're going to start thinking about but you want to know, my biggest thing on that is not so much of taking the players' money, because the players make so much money nowadays, so it doesn't even matter, really. But at the same time, when you start suspending players, that's when it hurts the players the most, is when you suspend the player. That taking money out of their pocket, that doesn't matter to these players. It's suspending the players.
That's what I talked about on Wednesday. And I mean, I don't disagree on both points in regards to the money. Yes, $75,000 and $50,000 is a lot of money to anyone,
mm-hmm.
regardless of how much they make. But for today's athlete, for some of them, Paul, but for the majority, and Benny can speak on this, the salary that you were paid, Benny, in comparison, if you were playing now, we've always talked to former athletes who always say they would have much rather played today's game just strictly because of the finances. So if you really want to make, if you're the NFL, if you really want to make an end to this, then punish
mm-hmm.
the team by suspending the player.
Right, exactly.
Hold everyone accountable. Holding them accountable financially, to me, if anything, I said to me, that's going to create an injury. Because that is one person's decision whether if it was, we're going to suspend you. I said to Paul, I know it's somewhat difficult to think of the philosophy, but take them out for a quarter even. Start with where a player would not be able to play for the first quarter or first half of the game. And that way the whole team has to hold everyone accountable, like a penalty, where, you know,
mm-hmm.
if a player gets a personal foul, you see the whole team saying, what are you doing? It was third down. Now you gave them, you know, now it's first and goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Money to these players, to me, is, and some of it can be used, again, as a status symbol. Look at how many fines I was able to accumulate. Dennis Rodman made a career of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I listened to the guy Rodney Harris on the show, I think last week, when he said he used to put away $50,000 for his fines every year. But he went into this situation to where he said he didn't care about the fine. It was when the suspension came is when it started hurting, because that not only hurt him, it hurts his team too. Because you can get a important player to go out and get suspended for a game and come next week, it could be a game that we need to win it to get into the playoff, and we don't have our top safety, our top corner, our top linebacker is out because of a suspension from a head-to-head collision.
We're talking to Benny Thompson, former NFL safety. Benny, what players – is it almost now at this point, just like you know that you can't go there, you can't – put your hands on the face mask. Is it almost going to be like that now, where players are now going to have to, in a lot of ways, retrain themselves?
Well, you know what? I don't know if they would have to start retraining themselves. But my thing is, like I said earlier, if I was still playing the game right now, I would go out and play the game like I've always been taught to play it, regardless of the outcome. I mean, you never go out to try to injure or hurt a guy, but you want to go out and let a guy know that he's in a football game.
Right. But will that violence be lost? Will that be lost?
I really do. I think some of it will be because of the fine situation. And from my understanding, the league are going to start suspending guys. So guys are going to have to take that in consideration when they go out and play on Sundays.
Right.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think that, you're going to see, I think, a lot of, like, I definitely think James Harrison, for example, some of these players that are impact players, but that cost him some bucks. And,
And certainly, you know, you don't. And he's now a marked man. I think the first time you get the fine, you know, that's also the league's way of saying, now we don't want to see you again for another X number of weeks, because it's certainly not going to be $50,000 the next time it's James Harrison.
Right.
And they've made that clear. And that's where I look at this. If I'm the league, I look at what I said this to Paul. I want to know what their goal is on this. Meaning, like, if they really want to clean up the league, then there really should have been more done in the off season. To be doing this in the middle of the season, to me, I think this is almost their way of posturing, getting ready for an off season that definitely is going to be very contentious and certainly important on the players and the league side. And I look at this between the lines and say, you know, they're doing, I think, a good job of looking at an important issue, but I don't think they're going about it right. I think they're going about it saying, again, to these players, they're really trying to control the player before, definitively, the player's biggest escape since the early 90s and the major free agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you heard, Benny, from any players, like, have they voiced serious, not just concerns, but frustration with the way how this came about in just the middle of the season?
You know what? I haven't heard anything on it. I haven't even spoken to anybody about it. I mean, so it's one of those deals, you know, but I haven't spoken to anyone about it.
Now, Benny, I wanted to get your thoughts here. Derek Brooks, former NFL linebacker, he talked about how, in a lot of ways, the offensive guy, when you have the running back who leads with his head, when he drops his head, they're now at an advantage with that, and they're using their head as a weapon. Talk about the offensive side of things, and now with the offensive guy dropping his head.
Well, The whole thing about this is this is going to be what they call a judgment thing, you know. I understand the point. I'm on Derek's side when he said when guys start to drop their heads, like a receiver coming across the middle to catch the ball, and he sees the defender and he drops his head, and our heads hit each other. That's got to be a judgment thing because, you know, the league have to take a look at that and say, okay, well, he dropped his head, so it was a head-on collision. Okay, who do you find here? Because it was a head-on collision. Okay, running back comes through the hole. He sees he's about to get hit. The first thing he does is go low, and then there's a head collision. So my thinking is who do you find? Because both guys dropped their heads, you know?
Right. And you get the sense that that hasn't really been defined, especially from the offensive side of things. And also, I heard Brian Dawkins talk about this, Broncos safety now. Basically, all these rules, you have the five-yard chuck, you have all the you can't touch the receiver down the field like you used to. All these rules are in favor of the offense.
Right.
And offense is what makes money for the league. So at the end of the day, with this and the possible 18-game schedule, is this really all about the money?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's why I look at it, once this thing came out about this going to the head thing, I looked at it and said one thing, NFL stands for no fun league. They're just taking all of the fun out of the game.
We heard that before.
Yeah. That's basically what they're doing. They're taking all of the fun out of the game.
I mean,
you're saying some of the fun of the game is getting that big hit on somebody.
Exactly. And you're right about this. Is the NFL all about the money? I think so. It's a $1 billion business, and they want to keep it as clean as possible, but they're taking the fun away from the game.
Right. Well, as the season goes on, I think we're going to – I know I wanted to spend some time, you know, getting into the economics of what's going to happen in the off season, because the NFL really does the best job of all four major sports controlling the player through, you know, recognizing they own this. It is definitely not a partnership. And this is an off season where I think the players' union has – at some point really tried to say they're going to also, for the first time, stand up for themselves and recognize the players in the NFL are just as important as the NFL is.
Oh, definitely. And I think the guy, DeMarcus Smith, the new director of whatever he is in the league, I think he's going to work more along with the players, unlike when Gene Upshaw was in there. Gene was working more along with the owners, the way this guy is more, looking out more for the players. And I think the players like this guy a little bit better because he's on the player side.
Which is definitely where he should be. Well, that's where he should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he, I mean, and that's why I say that the representation and for the players, it's a big off season, and I think it's a shame because the players in all of the major sports for too long have not really gotten. You hear about all the multi-million dollars, but it's very interesting to see how much revenue not just these leagues get. People don't know these leagues are tax exempt. The teams, you know, individually, the teams are every NFL team, Lurie bought the team for half a billion dollars, and now, just last year, his team was worth over a billion. So in less than a decade, his team doubled in value. And to say that, it's amazing because not many businesses double the value of their franchise in just under a decade.
Right.
And I don't think – go ahead, Paul.
But I think the key point here in terms of that is for a lot of years, the NFL players have gotten the short end of the stick. In comparison to the NBA and the NHL and baseball has one of the best unions in sports. If you look at it, a lot of these guys have guaranteed contracts. The NFL is still don't have the guaranteed contract. You have the signing bonuses, but you don't have the guaranteed contracts. And so, a lot of ways, the NFL player has gotten the short end of the stick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I mean, for the sport where, and Benny, you know this, the average player is under 4 years, under 5 years, and majority of that. You know, if you're not a first or second round draft pick, there's really not much money the average four-year player makes, unless you're the wild exception of a Ryan Leaf, who gets maybe 4 years in the league but gets $20 million guaranteed to him. Most of these players walk away from this game with little more than what they walked into it with.
Right.
Because of the taxes and the agent fees and the fact that there's up until now, very little education on, you know, what to do with the $2 million that you are going to receive. And like Paul said, where in comparative sports, with baseball, it's guaranteed money. In basketball, if you're a first-round draft pick, you may not make millions and millions of dollars, but it's all guaranteed money. So if you never play – it's all guaranteed.
Right. And I think that's one of the things discussions that was mentioned when they was talking about the 18-game season where the players wanted a portion of that money and the owners was not willing to give up a portion of that money. And so I think that's one of the things that they're going to probably have a big discussion about this offseason when they start talking about this 18-game regular season again and talking about cutting down the 2 preseason and going to the 18 regular season, but the owners don't want to give in and say, hey, no, we don't want to pay the players for 18 games. We just divide the checks up into 18 checks, instead of just giving the players a part of that money. The owners wants to keep the money for themselves.
Penny, we definitely appreciate you coming on. We appreciate the discussion. It was a good discussion. And thank you for stopping by. And, sir, we got to have you on again down the line.
Okay. Give me a shout, man. Let me know.
All right, sir.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Paul, before I go, you got to wish me well. Say a prayer for me. I got to get on my plane back to San Fran, settle in here for the game.
Well, you
give a second. You're getting old, Paul. You're getting old.
We have here a Bay Area
back to the Bay Area,
and so it's good to talk to you, Bay Area Jeremy. You have to switch your allegiance. You are a San Francisco Giants fan, and you are from the Bay. So good luck with your Giants tonight. But I think the Phillies will get it done tonight, and ultimately get it done in this series. We want to thank Scott Lee, CSM Bay Area, for stopping by. giving us his insight on this series. And we let it be known that Scott has said that the Giants will win tonight in this series. And also, I want to thank former NFL safety Eddie Thompson for stopping by and giving us his thoughts on the NFL crackdown on the head first hit. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/weekend. That's blogtalkradio.com/weekend, where you can listen to this show and other shows. For Jeremy Yesby, this is Paul Gann. See you later. Bye.